The news broke this month in the New York Times: sexual harassment and rape allegations leveled against film producer Harvey Weinstein going back decades. Weinstein was fired from the company last week, but the damage to the studio has grown. Yesterday, it was announced that a private equity firm is keeping the company afloat by buying off its assets. Numerous content partners like Apple and Disney, they've dropped projects that involve the Weinstein company. Most of the studio's board resigned. Before we move further into the hour, let's remember that this is a sensitive conversation and we should be aware of this and use discretion. We're discussing this moment in the film industry and the culture of discrimination in the workplace with Shireen Alamzada. She's a Chicago attorney and co-founder of Healing to Action, which aims to end gender-based violence, and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. Shireen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what was your takeaway from the disgraced Harvey Weinstein story here? What did you think?
Well, I think, the stories that were told by many of the women that had experienced his abuse were very consistent with what I've heard across industries from women, you know, in every kind of workplace. I think the consequences that he faced for what happened were actually somewhat surprising and heartening. And I hope that this story will give more people courage to come forward and to share what's happened to them as well.
So you think that being fired from his own company, from being basically thrown out of the academy, are pretty serious enough?
Well, I think, you know, the fact that there was an actual reaction to what happened and there were some consequences is good. I definitely think that there could be more consequences. I mean, he did engage in he's alleged to have engaged in several criminal activities. But, you know, there's just so many stories of women coming forward and reporting these kinds of incidents in the workplace and really having complete silence. And in fact, many of the women talked about that happening to them in this particular situation for many years. So the fact that something is finally happening, I think, is a step forward.
Why is it so difficult for women to come forward after they've been harassed or assaulted in the workplace?
Well, to really understand that question, you have to kind of take a second and put yourself in the shoes of someone who's experiencing this. Essentially, you're making a calculus. So you're thinking, okay, first of all, do I want to really relive this humiliating experience over and over? Or do I just want to forget about it? Do I want to pretend it didn't happen? Do I want to have to share it with HR, with the police, with my coworkers, with my family? The second question that a lot of people ask is, you know, will anybody believe me? And we see so many times that survivors are doubted, maligned, you know, people go after their reputation simply for trying to speak up and say something happened to them. And then for women in the workplace, there's also the issue of what the career cost or the economic cost of doing this are. So will they lose their job? You know, for women in low-wage work, will they be able to pay their rent or support their families? Will they be blacklisted from that job market? So those are all risks. And then the final one that I think many people think about is, well, what if nothing happens? You know, and that is really what the case is for so many cases of harassment, is that, you know, the company or the employer's number one priority is to keep the case quiet, to quickly resolve it, and to, you know, essentially pretend like it didn't happen. And so to go through all of that with such little, you know, possibility of benefit and so much risk of re-traumatization, it makes a lot of sense. It's a very rational decision for many women to decide that they feel like it's best if they just don't tell anybody what has happened.
Stay silent.
Mm-hmm.
So how common are these quid pro quo situations where the perpetrator, someone in a higher power, is asking for the person, you know, in a lower position to do something in favor of getting something in return?
I would say that it's obviously fairly common. I think that the more common kind of harassment situation now is probably what a hostile work environment. So a lot of times, you know, back when women first started to enter the workplace, I think quid pro quo was much more common because there was this sense that, you know, they didn't belong in the workplace and that they needed to pay some sort of sexual price for being there.
Oh, paying their dues.
Right. And the idea that, you know, that's what they were good for. It was, you know, to provide sex, to be in the home. And so the quid pro quo was quite common, particularly because there weren't a lot of consequences for employers. And then, you know, the Civil Rights Act was passed, Title VII was passed. And I think that quid pro quo has become less common, but as you can see, it's still very much the case, especially when there's huge power imbalances. So we see quid pro quo a lot in very low wage jobs, in, you know, precarious work, and then in situations where the employer is extremely powerful, like in this situation as well.
So what is common in the workplace that is, you're mentioning here, harassment in general?
Is it common? Is that the question?
What are you seeing more commonly in the workplace?
Yes. So I think the more common type of thing that you see is behavior that is really designed to make women feel like they don't belong in the workplace, but isn't necessarily tied to a direct request. Harassment isn't just from people in positions of power. It happens between coworkers. Sometimes it can even happen from subordinates. But at the heart of it is the idea that a person is not supposed to be in that job. And so that could range from anything from comments about the person's appearance and their body. It could be requests for sexual favors that aren't necessarily tied to some sort of job benefit, although of course, a lot of times that threat is looming in the background, particularly when we're talking about supervisory harassment. It can include things like sexual assault and rape and even some extremely severe cases, homicide, where women are rejecting sexual advances and are experiencing physical violence as a result. So there's a whole spectrum of behaviors in the workplace. And I would say that what I like to share with people is that for those most extreme and severe incidents of violence that happen, where people's lives are at risk and their physical safety is at risk, normally those things don't happen, you know, they don't just happen out of the blue. They normally start with comments. They normally start with a person pushing the boundaries to see how far they can get. And so it's very important to take all of those behaviors seriously, because if we don't, then we may be allowing for a situation to escalate into a place where a woman, as happened in this case, doesn't feel that her physical safety is secure in the workplace.
How important is documentation?
It is helpful. I think, you know, it's helpful to keep track of what's happening, to be saving, you know, any documentary evidence, whether it's emails or text messages. I understand why many people don't want to save those kinds of things, because they're so, you know, oftentimes traumatizing or disgusting, and you just don't want to have them in your possession. It is helpful. I think, though, that, you know, these cases are very difficult to prove, because ultimately it does generally come down to the word of a survivor and the word of the person that harmed them. And if that person that harmed them is in a position of relative authority or power, you know, they can take a lot of steps to undermine the credibility of the survivor. So I definitely encourage people to save everything and, you know, to try to keep a record of what's happened. But I also acknowledge that there are a lot of challenges in bringing in these cases, regardless of everything that you can do to try to build your case.
The sexual harassment allegations uncovered by the New York Times stretched back decades and came from actresses as well as former employees of the Weinstein Company and Miramax, the previous company that Harvey Weinstein and his brother founded. We're exploring whether this is a tipping point for Hollywood, whether it will change the culture of discrimination in Hollywood across other professions outside of filmmaking as well. In recent days, many actresses have been watching closely to see where the Weinstein revelations will lead the industry. Shireen Alamzada is with us. She's a Chicago-based attorney, and she's co-founder of Healing to Action, which is aims to end gender-based violence, and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Do you have a hashtag MeToo experience to share about sexual harassment? How does this Harvey Weinstein story make you feel about sexual harassment in the workplace? Will this make a difference? What do you think needs to happen to prevent sexual harassment? Join in, 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back after this news.
Every post was from some woman saying, me too, me too, me too. And I was like, wow, look at all this.
And I just started to reflect on my me too.
I kept it a secret because I believed I was responsible for his behavior.
It did happen to me, and it did happen to a lot of women that I know, inside my family and outside of it.
Me too, boo. Me too.
Me too.
Me too.
We just heard a compilation of voices responding to the Me Too hashtag on Facebook. Actress Alyssa Milano encouraged people to share their own stories of abuse using the hashtag Me Too. It's been used hundreds of thousands of times since it started Sunday night. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Shireen Alamzada stays with us. She is a Chicago-based attorney. She co-founded Healing to Action, which works to end gender-based violence, and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. You can join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. How are you helping to build a culture free from harassment in your workplace? What have you seen at work in terms of dealing with sexual harassment? What questions do you have about what the laws are around sexual harassment? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Shireen, that Me Too hashtag, it's been shared, tweeted nearly 500,000 times in those first 24 hours that actress Alyssa Milano put that suggestion out there. What's your reaction?
Well, I think it's very, very powerful to see, you know, people in your social media network who maybe have never said anything political before, who perhaps haven't been filtered out based on differences of opinion that you may have on other issues, you know, disclosing this kind of experience. It's obviously very brave for people to do it, because it really doesn't get more public for most people than making a disclosure on social media with everybody that they know. And so I think the you know, seeing these disclosures, seeing people's stories, makes the problem much more undeniable, the sheer number of people that have disclosed in such a short period of time, and also more immediate, because, you know, the people that are making, that are sharing these stories, that are talking about what have happened to them, are people that we know and care about. And so I do think it has a lot of value in this moment.
But can social media, you know, help produce any meaningful change?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, it's a question that's going to continue to be asked, as, you know, the sort of what next with the hashtag. I do want to mention that Me Too started 10 years ago. It was actually the idea, this phrase was used by an activist called Tarana Burke. And she was using this phrase as a strategy, a grassroots organizing strategy, to address the lack of attention that women of color in her community were receiving from police and social service agencies who had survived sexual assault. And her idea was that if we can share these stories with one another, we can create a support network that transcends the existing structures that are often so inadequate. And so I think if we can take the spirit of that and really work to build that kind of supportive structure and network, if we can really build on this idea that storytelling does have power and that it does build solidarity, that there is some potential for this to turn into something that is more, transformative, that actually leads to action.
Let's go to the calls now, 800-642-1234 with Ryan in Shattuck. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to touch on the fact that it had also been the Me Too hashtag had been changed over to people of all genders by a lot of people, me in particular, as a survivor of 11 years of childhood sexual abuse and someone who had been fired from a job after being sexually harassed and reporting it. It does affect men, women, and transgendered folk across the board.
Yeah, and go ahead, Shireen.
Yes, thank you so much for calling in and for sharing your story. And that's absolutely true. This is not, this is not specific to a particular gender. And, as I mentioned earlier, I think sexual harassment is really a way of telling people, of trying to control people and telling them that they don't belong in a workplace, that they're not conforming to particular gender stereotypes. And it's really important to understand how that harms everybody across the spectrum of gender, and particularly harms people who don't conform to certain gender stereotypes. So I absolutely agree that it's important not to forget, and also to make sure that we create a safe space for men to come forward, because disclosure is much more difficult in some ways because of the lack of awareness that this does happen to men.
And when someone is fired after coming out with an allegation of harassment, what message is that sending in the workplace?
Right. I mean, that is exactly why so many people decide not to come forward. I think something like 1 in 4 people make the decision to report to anybody that it's happened, and maybe less than 6 or 7% file a formal complaint. And the reason for that is because there is a lot of risk to coming forward. A study by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, I believe, recently showed that about 75% of people, they estimate about 75% of people that file these complaints experience retaliation. So we really have to do better on this. We have to create accountability at the institutional level and make sure that companies are valuing their employees' dignity and safety above, what their perceived reputation or financial interest might be, and protecting, people from information that they might find to be harmful.
Ryan, thanks for calling in. Let's go to Shelley now in Eau Claire. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I'm really glad that Ryan had called in, because, I really wanted to address that, this isn't just a male issue towards women. This is also, towards men and individuals who may be on the LGBTQ spectrum. I'm a huge advocate in my area, and I've seen it a lot, and I feel like that's something that also needs to be addressed as well.
What about that, Shireen, in terms of the LGBTQ community?
Yes, the LGBTQ community is very vulnerable, not just because rates of harassment are extremely high against LGBTQ people, but also because the state of the law is very tenuous in terms of protections. We saw that certain federal protections were rescinded under the Trump administration. Right now, in most jurisdictions in the country, the federal anti-harassment laws do not protect against discrimination against LGBT people for being LGBT. And so there's really very little to do if somebody is being fired or harassed, for failing to conform to the gender stereotype of being heterosexual or being cisgendered. And so these are real issues, and it's very important, I think, for these different communities to work together, women, LGBTQ people, because it all comes back to the same idea, which is that if you don't conform to a certain type, which is you know, this ideal prototype of a worker in the American workplace, a white, able-bodied, cisgendered, heterosexual man, that there are ways to try to punish you for that and to try to drive you out of the workforce. And so we kind of have to think about it at this larger structural level so that we can make sure that we're addressing all of the root causes of sexual harassment.
Shelley, thanks for calling in. Paul from Eau Claire has emailed. He said, a woman started working in our male workplace and filed a sexual harassment claim. The result was every single person stopped talking to her. Is this good for anyone?
So I would say that's absolutely not the way to handle, you know, the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace. That's just a different way of punishing people who are experiencing the harassment or who are at risk of experiencing the harassment. I think, you know, what people can do when they see this kind of issue happening in their workplace is really think about why this might be happening. Who are the people in the workplace that you might have influence or ability to speak with, to try to, you know, to educate a little bit about the issues, to think about the impact of their actions. And the issue, I think, that comes up a lot, the reason that sexual harassment often goes unchecked and sometimes escalates or becomes pervasive in work environment is because people aren't willing to put their own self-interest to the side and try to build a healthier and stronger workplace. And the idea of not speaking to a person because you're concerned about, you know, being accused of sexual harassment, I think, in a way that really discredits or undermines, you know, the belief that you, essentially what that's saying is you don't believe survivors when they say this has happened to them, or that you don't trust yourself to be able to refrain from acting in a hot, you know, an aggressive or unlawful manner. And so I think that men and women in the workplace can do much better than that.
We're looking at the takeaways this hour from the Harvey Weinstein scandal. Shireen Almzada stays with us. She's a Chicago-based attorney. She co-founded Healing to Action, which is a worker-led movement to end gender-based violence, and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. Getting your thoughts, 800-642-1234. How does this Harvey Weinstein story make you feel about sexual harassment in the workplace? Do you see this as a turning point? Why or why not? Did you participate in the Me Too hashtag? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Shireen, what are some systematic changes that you would like to see made, you know, in the workplace to help put a stop to harassment?
Well, I think, you know, again, a lot of these issues are happening at an institutional level. And so it's really about creating real structures that people can use to report, but also about creating a workplace culture that really mitigates against people feeling like this kind of behavior is acceptable. If you have a workplace where people are really serious about the idea of gender equity, they're really serious about being inclusive and having, you know, different identities contributing to the work, you're going to have a culture that is really going to militate against, you know, abuse and harassment. When you have a workplace culture where everybody is kind of from the same background, I think that that does feed into othering of people that come into the workplace and don't conform. So those kinds of, you know, deeper sort of cultural strategies to addressing masculinity and you know, gender conformity in the workplace are very important. You need to have good reporting. You need to have people in the workplace that workers feel safe going to, that they feel they're going to be believed, that they feel that there's going to be action taken. I can't tell you how many people have talked to me about how they just didn't report to HR because they just knew nothing was going to happen. That was the reputation that their HR department had. So you have to create a culture of accountability and action within the internal structures. And then there have to be some changes to the laws. The laws have to be stronger. Our legal system has to be better at handling these types of claims. And we need to essentially create a culture where when people come forward, the immediate reaction is not to discredit what they're saying and to make them feel as though it was their fault what had happened to them.
Let's go to Jackie now in Milwaukee. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My story really talks about the culture that you're speaking about. When I was in my 20s, I worked in a hospital, and the physician on my team, he was in his 60s, repeatedly for 9 months asked me out, told me he would not take no for an answer, even though he was married and I had a boyfriend. It was awful. And when I finally had the courage to go to my boss, she took me to the CEO, who put his hand on my knee and told me if I was his daughter, he would handle it this way. He would tell me to handle it this way. And he told me that I shouldn't look at the physician, I should avoid meetings with the physician. And so it just really goes to the culture of the institution. And I was too young to know back then what was happening to me, that I was being harassed again. And I wish I would have gone to human resources, but I just didn't know. I was too young.
Shireen.
Thank you so much again for calling and sharing your story. I know it takes a lot of courage to share these types of experiences. I think, you know, it really hits the nail on the head as to why so many people are discouraged from coming forward. One of the things that I, you know, noticed from the story is the idea that the survivor, the person that's experiencing the violence, has to be taking actions to support, to prevent it from happening, to manage the situation. And the reality is that those types of that type of advice is not going to work. It's oftentimes going to be futile, because you know these behaviors are really motivated from something that is out of the control of the survivor. It's not about, you know, trying to avoid the person, because if they want to harass you, they will figure out a way. It's about figuring out how to address the behavior on a larger level throughout the company, and making sure that when people come forward, they're not alone and they're not being told that they need to figure out a way to just deal with it and handle it, because there's always going to be that next person down the line who is in the same situation. And that is how a culture of, you know, a toxic workplace culture can develop.
Jackie, thanks for your call. Actress Mayim Bialik took heat for her New York Times op-ed when she wrote she avoided harassment in Hollywood by dressing modestly, she said, and not being flirtatious with men. She was accused of victim blaming, then said in a Facebook Live video yesterday that that was not her intention. She added that, quote, "There's no way to avoid being the victim of assault by what you wear or the way you behave." What do you think of what Bialik had to say?
Well, you know, I think she was probably trying to share her own story and her own experiences. And I have seen a lot of people try to cope with these issues in different ways, whether it's, you know, trying to dress a certain way, trying to laugh things off, trying to minimize what's happening. And, you know, the way that people, the ways that a person might decide that they're going to try to cope is their decision. And I respect all of the decisions that people have to make. I do think, however, that, you know, my immediate thought when I read the article was of all the women I've worked with who have no control over what they wear at work, because they're wearing a unisex uniform, they're wearing heavy safety gear, and who experience harassment at alarmingly high rates. And so I think the main problem with the article was, or the interpretation that I think was problematic, was that, you know, putting the burden on women to prevent being harassed, just as the caller before was discussing had happened at her company, is just not going to solve the problem. That is essentially what we call in our field rape culture. It's the idea that...
We're going to have to get back to that in just a moment. We're up against a news break here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Journalists say they've known about Harvey Weinstein's ways for years, but they could never get victims to go on the record. For more than 20 years, Weinstein has been tied to rumors of sexual harassment and assault. The New Yorker calls his behavior, quote, an open secret to many in Hollywood and beyond. But the attempts to publish a story over the years fell short of journalistic evidence. Now there's a hashtag MeToo where women are coming forward to discuss their experience being harassed and assaulted in the workplace. More actresses are coming forward with their stories. We're discussing this with Shireen Alamzada. She's a Chicago-based attorney, co-founder of Healing to Action, which is a worker-led movement to end gender-based violence and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. How has your workplace dealt with harassment? Have you spoken up before as a bystander? What changes need to happen in workplaces to stop a culture of discrimination? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to Lissa now in Green Bay. Hi, Lissa.
Hi. So you guys, before the break, we're talking about, a woman perhaps not dressing provocatively, quote unquote, that would prevent sexual harassment or something. And then, of course, that's a ridiculous notion. And that, like you said, puts the onus of making change on the woman, which doesn't make sense because she's the one being victimized. But the other part is, if I were a man in the workplace, and the accusation is that if a woman dresses a certain way, I can't control myself, I would find that very disrespectful and inappropriate. The implication is that men can't have boundaries just because they have boundaries, which is ridiculous.
Shireen, do you want to comment on that?
Sure. I think that's absolutely true. A lot of the sort of underside of this rape culture, the idea that people need to protect themselves from men, it really cuts both ways. I think it really does a disservice to men. It does a disservice to young boys to be teaching our young girls that they need to protect themselves, and then, you know, not really having a conversation about consent and respect and equality at a young age with people, or assuming that that's not something that people have had growing up. So I think we need to really think about this larger culture that really demeans both men and women in terms of what their value is and also what their sort of temperament or their intrinsic kind of qualities are, which I don't agree with the idea that a man is inherently, you know, sexually attracted and aggressive and desirous of all women and can't control themselves.
Lissa, thank you for calling in. Eric in Viroqua, he called in, couldn't stay with us. He says he lost a job over a false claim of sexual harassment. He says he isn't taking anything away from people who have been assaulted, but some people use the claims as a weapon. Shireen, how common is this?
So, first, I want to distinguish between, because I think there is some confusion between false claims and unsubstantiated claims. So a false claim of sexual harassment is a claim where it's been proven through an investigation that what happened didn't, that what was alleged did not actually occur and it never happened. An unsubstantiated claim is one where there is a story that the survivor has told, but there's not enough evidence to take action on the story, whether it's publishing this, you know, story, whether it's taking legal action or doing something, applying some sort of consequence as a result of the allegation. In terms of false reports, I believe it's somewhere between 2 and 7%. And that's about the same as for any crime. So for any crime, you will have false reporting. And I think there is definitely an outsized focus on false reporting when it comes to sexual violence as compared with other types of crimes. Where the focus, I believe, should really be more on the underreporting. But of course, it is something that happens, as it does with any other crime. But I do find that there's a lot more attention paid to false reporting in our narrative around sexual violence than there is on the issue of how many people are scared to report, how often this is happening, and nobody is telling anybody.
Let's go to Valerie now in Rice Lake. Hi, Valerie. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a comment. when I was in my 20s, a coworker, a male coworker, and I were in a room alone. He walked up to me, gave me a big hug, stood back, and with this grin on his face, like, look what I got away with. I gave him a look of, you do that again, you're going to be hurting. He dropped his grin, turned on his heels, left the room quickly, and didn't come near me again, stayed away, never repeated the incident.
So Valerie used her body language to make a point. Shireen, is this common? Does it work?
I think it works sometimes. It really, it depends on the individual situation. I think people have a variety of ways they try to manage a harassing situation. And, you know, I tell the clients that I've worked with that they're the expert of their situation. They know who the person is. They know what the company is like. And so they should really make decisions based on their own understanding of the situation.
Thanks, Valerie, for that call. And Shireen, during a Sunday night football broadcast, commentator Al Michaels tried to make a joke comparing the Giants' rough week to Harvey Weinstein. Let's take a listen.
I mean, let's face it, the Giants are coming off a worse week than Harvey Weinstein. And they're up by 14 points.
Only my L.A. guy comes up with that
one. Well, you know.
There you go.
All you have to do is read the papers, any paper.
Michaels later apologized for being flip. Making light of this, is that a common reaction, perhaps among men?
I think it depends, you know, for some people, I think for most people, this is a very uncomfortable topic, and it's something that people feel, feel very nervous about. And so sometimes people react to it using humor. Obviously that creates a lot of, that can create a lot of harm. It can make people feel like the experiences that they've had are minimized. But, you know, I think it kind of goes to the uneven sort of understanding of the gravity of the issue and perhaps lacking a little bit of thinking about the impact that some of this is having on the people that experience the harassment and not just on Weinstein himself.
What can men do to help stop harassment in the workplace?
Well, there is so much that men can do. I think the first thing is, because for a lot of men in the workplace, this is not an issue that directly affects them. It takes first a commitment to putting your own self-interest on the line, the way that we expect women or whoever surviving gender-based violence to do when they have to come forward and report. So that might mean having an uncomfortable conversation with a colleague who makes inappropriate comments. It could mean accompanying a coworker to make a report so that they don't feel alone. It could mean, you know, making room for women to speak in meetings, to create a culture where women are included and respected at a very deep level. So I think, you know, just taking stock of where you are, what are some of the problematic behaviors that you see in your workplace, and then really making the decision that you're going to take action on them can go a long way.
Let's take Tom now in Muskego, who has a comment. Hi, Tom, go ahead.
Good morning. I don't know if I tuned in a little too late or if somebody asked this question already about what the goal moving forward, what's the action that you guys are going to be taking differently than what's already in place? A lot of like speaking of like rape, they talk about women not wanting to go to report them. Well, the police has always been there and nobody's been stopping these women from reporting them. Same thing with HR. HR has always been there. Are you talking of some kind of different discipline? I'm sorry, I can't talk. Discipline to the accuser? Because you talked about false claims and unsubstantiated claims. And how do you differentiate between the two? Is there going to be a more aggressive investigation or what?
Yeah, Tom, we get what you're saying. Shireen, what are the vehicles? Because as Tom said, police have been there. HR has been there.
Yeah, they have been there. And, you know, as I mentioned before, the issue of institutions being held accountable is important, and the police and the HR company, you know, the HR resources of a company are no exception to that. So I think that there definitely can be room to improve the responses of those institutions. I've worked with many HR departments, I've worked with the police, and there is this culture that is pervasive, not within those institutions specifically, but within our entire society, that really work, you know, really discredits survivors, that questions what they say, and that re-victimizes them through the process of reporting. And so I think some of the action steps that need to be taken are creating more accountability for the institutions that respond to sexual violence, in addition to the ones, you know, that enable it to happen. And then also, you know, thinking about other ways of preventing this from happening. So how do we change our culture? How do we educate our children? How do we create a conversation that is safe for women who don't feel that they can go to law enforcement or HR? With Healing to Action, what we do is we actually do community-based organizing around the issue. So we try to go into communities, whether it's a union or a school, and have this conversation, start to really, you know, hash these issues out and try to create a broader and deeper understanding of why gender-based violence happens and what we can all do, how it's incumbent on all of us, not just the police or not just the survivors, to take actions to try to stop this from happening in the future.
Shireen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Shireen Alamzada. She is a Chicago-based attorney, co-founder of Healing to Action, which is a worker-led movement to end gender-based violence, and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. We've been discussing the Harvey Weinstein scandal and the allegations he engaged in rampant sexual assault, what it means for Hollywood and work environments across the country. We can continue this conversation over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Keely Baltina, with technical direction from executive producer Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and this conversation is on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.